So in this last stage of the sales cycle, I call the annual review. There's really two components to the annual review. The first component we'll be talking about is probably exactly what you expected, and that is what to do in an annual review. That's why it's called the annual review. But the other component is just as important, and that is how to manage your entire client database. It's amazing to me throughout the years of being in this industry how few reps really have a great deal of understanding how to manage their clients to actually even begin to do an annual review. So we'll break this down into both of those components. So when we're talking about managing your client base within your entire system, we first have to agree that there is a finite number. In other words, it's not an infinite number. More is not better. It can't be 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people. So what that tells you is that once you've been in the business for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you have to have a system that keeps that a tight number. So as you're putting people in it, you're also taking people out of it. Let's just agree that this is a really important part of your practice. Year after year after year, I meet reps that never take anybody out of their system, and they just have anybody who has ever bought anything for decades upon decades, and that just gets way too out of control. We'll be talking about how to limit that and how to manage that. If you agree with me and there has to be a finite number that you manage, then there has to be a way that you get rid of your clients. And that's always a big question mark for a lot of reps that I work with. They'll say to me, Jim, how do I do that? If there are people that have bought products from me over the years, I can't just get rid of them. And there's really three choices that you can manage. Number one is that you can send them a letter and say that you will forever service the products that they own with you, but there's really no need on an ongoing basis to get together on an annual review. More often than not, those clients get that letter and they just simply call if they need something. The second way you could do it is that you could give those clients to a junior rep. However, I would caution you with that, because more often than not, if those clients don't measure up for you, they're probably not going to measure up for a junior rep either, and they shouldn't be seeing them either. But that is an option. And the third option is sometimes a home office or a local agency will have a client resource center that will manage those clients for you, and you can give that to that center as well. But there has to be a way that you get rid of your clients to manage it to a finite number. So it's at this point in time that I get into some very interesting conversations with reps who say, Jim, why is it that I need to get rid of these people? I've worked hard for them. I'm not calling them on an active basis, but if they need something down the road and I still have them in my system, then I can get those sales. And my stance is no, you can't do that. You have to figure out exactly how many people you want to work with, and then you have to go all in with those people. You just can't be sitting back and meeting with people who call you for anything at any time. This is an important part of the system that you really need to embrace. If there's something small that they want to add to their portfolio and your staff is fully licensed, I'm okay with your staff handling that. But here's the point I'm trying to make. You only have time for so many clients to be very professional and very thorough with. And for you just to drop everything and meet with somebody because they want one product doesn't do your service a good job. We have to have our hands wrapped around that finite number and be all in with those clients. And that's all we want to work with. So let's begin with what a perfect world would look like for an advisor. Number one, it's that you're busy as much as you want to be busy. And number two is that you absolutely love everybody that you're meeting with. Imagine that for a second, because it is possible. Imagine if you came to work every day and you looked at your calendar and you were absolutely stoked to be with those people that you have on their calendar that day. That's the world we're trying to build towards. So therefore, people that don't call you back, people that don't respect your opinion, people that don't do what it is that you ask them to do, people that you have to schedule 3 and 4 meetings with to get them to keep are not the people that have earned the right to be in your system. You got to start getting rid of those people, and you need to add more people that you're very, very excited about. More often than not, there is a huge correlation to the attitude and the mentality of an advisor, to the level that they are really enjoying what they do in terms of the quality of the people that they do it with. People are lucky to have you as an advisor. Let's make sure we never forget that. So one of the things financial representatives from across the country really enjoy about this module is, for some reason, I don't really know why, I don't have the explanation, is that the annual review is very poorly taught in the industry. Not only what to do in an annual review, but how to manage your active client system. And so I think you're really going to enjoy diving deep into this, and you're going to feel as if this is something that you really needed to do quite some time ago. So if we're going to agree on a finite number that you should have in terms of your client base, the first thing you have to figure out is, how does one measure up? How do they get in that? Let's say your number is 400, but you have far more than that. The first thing you need to do is figure out, how do you make a decision if you have more than that now as who is in and who is out? I call that a least acceptable client. And so you can define that by annual income, by net worth. You can do it objectively like that, but you should also be doing it subjectively. You really enjoy them. You value your relationship with them. They honor your appointments. They respect the advice you give them. They refer you to others. So now you have a standard. And now what you need to do is probably take a good half a day or a day. I recommend a Saturday, because during the weekday it can be too distracting, where you have to do what I call clean house. You have to go through your entire CRM and you have to take out those people that don't measure up, and you have to keep in those people that do. Before you begin this process of cleaning house, I want to warn you ahead of time. When you do it, and you do it the right way, it will be fairly disappointing to you. And you will be disappointed because of the fact that you will have thought that you had more and better clients because you've never really been through this process before. I find reps have a false sense of security who have kept clients forever. They're sitting on this large amount of clients, but they're not the type of clients that they really want to have. So once you go through this cleaning house and you get it to what I like to call a lean, mean, fighting machine, then what you're going to have is a greater sense of urgency. And you'll also have a higher degree of awareness as to the quality of people that you're prospecting for, because you know what they need to look like to earn a right in your system. As you begin this process of cleaning house, it is going to be a tedious process. It might take a half a day, or even 2 days if you've been in the business for a long time. But to maintain it going forward is relatively simple. Every single month, you are making a decision based on who you're adding in and who you're taking out. And I would say no more than maybe 15 minutes a month on an active basis, you can manage this in a very healthy way. So when we talk about this system that you have now for all of your clientele, your database, so to speak, and your CRM, it's important that you understand, how does somebody get in that system? Reps are very mistaken about this throughout the country that I work with. They think that it's just when somebody buys something. But if we're talking about core risk-based products, life insurance, disability insurance, long-term care, annuities, statistics tell us that approximately 1/3 of the new clients that you meet will buy from you. But they don't all buy right away. So let's just use an easy number. Let's assume that you meet 100 new people for the first time. Statistically, the numbers tell us that approximately 33 out of those 100 will end up buying from you. However, 20 of the 33 will buy in that first year that you meet them. 10 will buy something the second year after you met them, and 3 will buy the third year after you met them. So therefore, if you don't have a system that is systematically getting you in front of people that you met, that you like, but for one reason or another haven't bought yet, think about all those sales that you'll be missing. And so what you have to do is, once you meet somebody and you take what could be called a fact finder on them, some sort of data gathering information of a new potential client, they need to at that time be entered into your system. And then they'll come up every year for their birthday call, and they'll come up for 6 months after that call for their annual review. So an annual review doesn't have to be conducted with just people that have bought products from you. It's important that you understand that. So I'm a big Stephen Covey fan, and one of my favorite of the 7 habits of highly effective people is to begin with the end in mind. So as we begin this annual review module, what I want to ask you is, what is it that we really want to accomplish? If we have a great sense of clarity to the answer of that question, then we can bring intentionality to how we do our end reviews each and every time to get the highest likelihood of a perfect outcome. So the first objective is that we want the client to feel as if we have taken complete ownership of the journey to financial security planning. What do I mean by that? I want them to feel as if we've come on their side of the table. We've put our arm around them, and we've really taken the ownership in a way that we become an advocate to that long-term objective of achieving financial security together. And they don't feel it's a lonely world. They feel as if we truly care, and we own the outcome with them together as a partnership. So the second objective is we want to be well-organized, we want to be extremely professional, and we want to be very thorough. So let me tell you what that's not, winging it. Often, I see reps going out to annual reviews without doing any preparation work whatsoever and just kind of fishing, just kind of seeing how it goes. And what I'm telling you is don't do that. You want to come across extremely professional, very thorough, and very well-organized. The next objective is we want the client to feel as if there's continuity to our planning process. They have a sense of clarity as to where they have come from, where they are today, and where we're taking them into the future. And they really own that. It's almost kind of like building a house where you know the end product. In your world, the end product is complete financial security. But when you build a house, you see the whole house, you have a vision. But at the end of the day, you know you start with a foundation, and then you do the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing to ultimately get to the point that you have a completed project. That's what we want them to feel as we meet with them every year in the annual review. The next objective is we want to continue making progress by opening up what I like to call new cases of what they need to continue to do to move the ball down the field. I call them making case opens, but you're meeting them, you're not only giving them an update as to what everything is and where it's at, but you're also talking about the next thing they need to do, and then the next thing they need to do, and so on and so forth. There's different things that they need to be doing year after year in all of these annual reviews. And part of your objective when you go out in those annual reviews is to agree with the client as to what are the next steps they need to be taking and then continue to make progress with those. Last but not least, you want to get referrals. That's the fifth objective. Why is that? Because people tend to refer you to people just like them. So once you've gotten your client system down to this lean, mean fighting machine, you're excited about who you're working with, those are the people that are kind of the warm, fuzzy beds. Those are the people that they like you, you like them, and they will introduce you to other people just like them. So let's be clear, the fifth objective is we want to get referrals. Now that you have heard those five objectives, you can probably understand that it's impossible to achieve those objectives if you have a haphazard system in how you get together with your clients. If you see one client every 2 years and you see somebody else in 6 months and then somebody else you haven't seen for 5 years, you can't accomplish all those objectives. So you have to have a system that you get in front of them on a regular basis. That's what we're going to talk about next. So now once you embrace this first step of the system where you call clients up and say, hey, we do an annual review every single year, for your new clients that you explain to them when you first meet them that this is part of your practice, they'll understand and they'll expect it. And then when you do that every single year, it will become a habit. But it does bring up a question that all reps when I teach this system ask me. Hey, Jim, I've had these clients for like 5 years, 10 years. I haven't done this ever. What do I do with them? Because they're people I like. They're people that when I cleaned house, I kept them in my system. But if all of a sudden now I'm going to take this stance that, hey, you have to meet with me every year, and they've never had to deal with that before, what do you suggest? I would simply call them up and say, hey, I'm really excited about some changes I'm making in my practice because I'm always trying to get better. And one of the things that I'm changing is I'm gonna now meet with all of my clients every single year, clients like you. And the reason I wanna do that is because I wanna take full responsibility for this journey in getting you to financial security. And if we don't meet once a year, every single year, I can't do my job the way I wanna do it. So the reason I'm calling you is to set that first one up. Next Tuesday, is 1 o'clock or 3 work better for you? So what I really want you to stop doing is cherry picking. going through all your clients on a random basis, figuring out who you can sell something to. That means your practice is about you. And that's not what we're trying to build here. We're trying to be there for our clients. When we have an abundant mentality and you do a professional practice the way that I teach it, the money that you make, the rewards that you get, the recognition that you will receive will be plentiful. But first and foremost, when it's about the client and not about you, you won't cherry pick. You'll embrace this system, and every single year, your clients will meet with you. So when you get to this system and now a name comes up that you're about ready to call and you're not excited about calling that name, what you don't want to do is call them up and just kind of feel it out. See if there might be something that's worth your time. When that name comes up for you to call and you're not excited about it, that means that that is somebody that needs to get out of your system. Imagine what your practice would look like if every single year, because you're doing this process that I call sifting and winnowing, you're adding really good quality relationships and really good quality people, and you're taking out the people that don't measure up. Every year, your practice is gonna get more enjoyable, and the strength and the quality and the caliber of the relationships you have with your clientele is gonna be extremely rewarding. This part of sifting and winnowing is important, and you've gotta honor it. So hopefully I don't have to sell you on the fact that you should have a system to manage your clientele. But MDRT, Million Dollar Roundtable, has done a lot of research. And if I'm not selling you and it's not working, maybe this statistic will. For a new client, the average financial advisor spends 23 and a half hours for the first sale. And the second time they buy, it's 2.5 hours. And the third time and beyond, it's only an hour. So what that tells us is it's really hard to acquire a new client. But once they become a new client and trust builds over time, it becomes easier and easier and easier and easier. So therefore, if you don't have a systematic process to keep in touch with your clients on a regular basis, you're probably doing all the hard work, and then all the easier sales are going by the wayside or falling through the cracks. That's why having this system is so, so important. I always say every year to a financial advisor, this business should get better for you, defined by it should be easier, you should work less, and you should make more money. As the strength of those relationships continue to grow and you're systematically getting in front of them on a regular basis, so you're seizing all those easier opportunities, that's a big reason why this system makes a lot of sense. So I want to share with you one more statistic that'll get you really excited, but let's make sure we're talking about the same thing here, and that is risk-based products. And I'm talking about premium. So therefore, if you're selling life insurance or disability, what the premium is. The average risk-based customer buys 7 separate times throughout their life. Your best clients will buy 13 or 14 or 15 times, but the average one will buy 7 times. But that's not the most exciting statistic. The second part of that statistic is the premium of the most recent sale is greater than the summation of all the previous sales. So for example, if your client is buying something for the 4th time, if you took the premium that they're buying on that 4th purchase, it's greater than the 1st, the 2nd, and the 3rd added up. So the reason that is because of trust and the strength of the relationship. It might not take a lot of time to sell somebody a very basic term life insurance policy, but it does take a lot of time to sell them a substantial premium permanent life insurance policy. So therefore, what's the moral of the story? If we found out earlier that it takes 23 and a half hours to sell somebody the first time, and then only 2.5, and then only 1, we know that it gets substantially easier. But based on the stat that I just gave you, we also know that it becomes substantially more profitable. So if you don't have a system to get back in front of these people on a very consistent, systematic basis, you're making the business way too hard. It's like every single year is your first year. I'm trying to create systems that when you get out of your own way, make this business every year more profitable, a lot more fun, a lot more enjoyable, and easier. So that's why we have to have these systems. So now let's take a look at what happens over time. I like to call this process sifting and winnowing. I'm just gonna use the graph here showing the number that I came up with for my practice, which was 400. I told you earlier, it depends on your practice. Some of you might have 250 or 300. Some of you might have as many as up to 500, but there is a finite number. If you take a look at this graph, you're gonna see what happens over time. The quantity of people in your system shouldn't change. So you see this graph shows that I had 400 people in my system. But what happens is every single year, your clientele get more and more and more valuable. And the reason being is because of the fact that the people that you're meeting now, the newer people, should be far better than people you met 5 and 10 years ago. But what has to happen is once you get to that number, if that number is 400, for every new person you put in, you have to take somebody out. And the caliber and the quality should be growing over time. So the 400 isn't what we focus on getting a lot better. It's the overall value of the 400. But we must agree that it's really, really important that we have a limit and we just can't keep adding and not taking out of the bottom once we get to that number. So if you work with business owners, you probably know that successful business owners have a really good handle on what the net worth of their business is. What is it valued at? And they could do that in a number of different formulas. If it's a manufacturing company, maybe they use 7x EBITDA, but they know it and they know whether or not it's going up or going down year after year. Do you know the value of your practice? If so, how would you determine that? I want to show you an example of what I used. And I'm not telling you that this formula is the right one for you, but what I am telling you is you should have a formula and year after year after year, it should be consistent. So therefore, you know the health of your practice and you know whether or not it's growing. So what I did is just take the numerator and take annual income plus total net worth. And then the denominator, I would divide it by how many years it's been since their first purchase. And why do we do that? Because somebody that is a brand new client to you, looking into the future, is worth more to you than somebody that you've had for, let's say, 10 years and has already bought 6 or 7 separate times. So this is a formula I used, but every year I kept it consistent and it would give me a very, very good indicator as to the overall health of my clientele. So now let's go to the second step in the annual review module, and that is the phoning language that you use to call up your clientele and make that annual review appointment. What I suggest is for those of you who have staff who you are very, let's just say, trustworthy of, they've been there for a while, and you like the work that they do, that they can call your clients and they can ask for the appointment for the annual review. Obviously, if you don't have staff, you will be doing that. But it should be very clear, very concise every single time. So if I'm calling up Tom Smith, I would just simply say, hey, Tom, it's Jim Effner. The reason I'm calling today is it's time for our annual review. What does next Tuesday look like? 3 o'clock or 5:30 work best for me? That would be the language that I would use, and I would suggest that you keep it that simple as well. So as we begin this phoning process to set up the annual review, it's very important that you're willing to stand for something. What do I mean by that? That when you call them, if they don't want to do the annual review, or they don't return your phone calls on messages that you left them, what are you going to do about that? What I'm here to tell you is that you need to move on. If somebody is not willing to meet with you on an annual basis to do this review, then they can't be a client of yours. Now, across the country, I always get somebody that challenges me from, let's just say, Mr. or Mrs. Big. I'm okay with you having maybe a half a dozen or so exceptions to the rule that are your most successful, most affluent clients that you're just not gonna wanna get rid of them if they won't give you the annual review. But those should be very, very few and far between. So therefore, you not only need language to set the appointment, but you need to have language as to how you're going to overcome the standard objections. So let's just start with those. So now, if we're going to talk about objections to this phone appointment for the annual review that we're making, I would recommend that if your staff isn't as effective as you, that first time that new client makes an objection, that maybe your staff hands those files over to you. But here is what I would recommend. The overall theme is that what I really want to come across here and teach, no matter what they do or don't do. So for example, if their objection is, you know, just send me something, or I'm too busy, or nothing's changed, or no need to get together this year, the overall theme of how I'm going to respond to that is going to be pretty consistent. And if the prospective client's name is, let's just say, Bob, I would simply say, Bob, I can understand and appreciate that you're very busy or whatever it is that person said. However, I don't know if you remember, but when we first met, I told you that every single client of mine meets with me for an annual review. Let me explain why. Because I take very seriously and 100% of responsibility for my clients' financial security. It's impossible for me to take on that responsibility if I'm not in front of them once a year, every year, to be updated on all the things that are going on in their world. I also find it really important to have a relationship with my clients, and I find that to be very difficult if I don't have a meeting with them every single year. So, looking at my calendar next week, Tuesday looks really good for me. Would 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock be better for you? So now, once we're at this point in our annual review process and our system, we have to be very willing to fire some clients occasionally. If we have this conversation, we overcome or at least make an attempt to overcome their objections, and they still say, you know what, I just don't want to meet. Somehow, some way, you have to come up with a very professional, very polite language that tells them then we're not working together anymore. It simply might sound like this. Bob, I can understand and appreciate that you're super busy and you do not want to do an annual review, but I have to tell you, I'm just uncomfortable taking on the responsibility of being your financial advisor if we're not going to meet together every single year. So if you don't want to do that, then I think we need to part ways. So you remember when I began with Stephen Covey's Begin with the End in Mind, what it is that we want to accomplish? And one of them said that we want to come across extremely professional, very thoroughly prepared for that meeting. That's where this third step comes in. You have to create a process to prepare for these meetings. So once that appointment has been made, there should be a way that your staff knows exactly what needs to be prepared for that meeting. Then there should be a time that you review all of that stuff prior to going to that annual review. And you and your staff need to be in complete alignment as to what it is and how you're going to do that. You also have to be really good at keeping good, thorough case notes because you're not going to remember conversations that you had a year ago. So put personal notes in there, put professional notes in there, give an executive summary of your meeting, and through those case notes and this system that you've now created to get fully prepared for the annual review, you will definitely come across extremely thorough and very professional. So an example of a meeting preparation checklist you can create would be one that I use that was very simple. Number one, it would have a financial security checklist and updated on that from the last meeting. I would also have a copy of their plan. I would have a summary of all the products that they owned with me. I would have an understanding of the past referrals and introductions that they've given me, along with what happened with them. And then I would spend 12 to 15 minutes reading all that stuff, and I'd be ready to go for the annual review. I'm a big fan of a financial security checklist. What I mean by that is it gives somebody an agenda of all the things that they need to accomplish in order to reach that space called financial security. And here's what I think your job is as an advisor, especially a very, very, very good advisor. And that is when you first meet a client, when they think of long-term financial security, it's this little flickering light at the end of a long train tunnel. But then your job as an advisor over the years is to turn what early on seemed to be impossible into then the possible and then the probable. And that takes a lot of effort. But you see, if you have a financial planning checklist every single year you're meeting with them in the annual review, through putting checks in the boxes, you can help demonstrate the progress that they're making. Because it's never about perfection. It's about progress. And if every year you're showing them that and you're giving them an update of that, they will feel comfortable and they will start to believe that being someday financially secure really is possible. So here is just a simple copy of a financial planning checklist I used. You don't have to use this one. You can put some thought and effort into how you want to put it together for the practice that you have. But I do like the fact that you come every single year with a checklist, because clients will be programmed to want to work hard with you together to put a check in the box. They want to be better every year than they were the previous year. They will begin to look forward to their annual reviews with you. So together, as a partnership, you as their advocate, you can get more and more and more checks in those boxes. I found it to be very effective. My clients really liked it. I strongly encourage you to get this into your system. So the fifth step in this system for the annual review is getting you to use an agenda and have it very detailed to the point that you can explain it at the beginning of every single annual review. I find this to be a really, really effective way to come across extremely professional, thorough, prepared, and it really helps your client understand that you take your role and your responsibility very seriously. It's also extremely impressive to them. So when you start out the annual review, what I would want you to say is, hey, Mr. and Mrs. Prospect, before we get started today, my team and I have put a lot of time and effort into what it is that we want to cover today. But before I get started, I've prepared an agenda. I just want to make sure that we are on the same page. Would it be fair enough if I cover that with you? And then go through your agenda, and at the end, ask them, if I cover all of this, have I met your expectations, or is there something else that I am missing? And when they say, no, that's great, then you can proceed. So the sixth step in the annual review sales cycle is you doing a discovery agreement. Now, let me be clear here. You remember that we did a discovery agreement at the end of a fact finder interview a few modules ago. This is no different. The only difference is this is somebody that you've obviously had in your system for a year or two or three or four. But after we've spent practically an hour, approximately, in that annual review, we want to summarize it in a fashion that is clear, concise, and compelling, and the client knows exactly what it is that we talked about. So you simply might want to say at the end of the meeting, hey, Bob, I've really enjoyed our time together, but just before I leave, to make sure we're on the same page, would it be okay if I gave you an executive summary of what I'm taking away from the meeting today and what I think our next steps are that we need to deal with? And then simply do your discovery agreement. Now, if there is a case open and there's going to be next steps, then what we want to make sure is that we don't leave that meeting without setting the date, the time, and the location for that next meeting. That's a really critical step. Don't let them say, I need to check with my spouse and look at their calendar. You can look back at them and say, let's make an educated guess while I am here so we don't have to play phone tag. If when you get back home and you check with your spouse and that time doesn't work, just call my office and we'll change it. But while I'm here, let's get a stake in the ground. Do that before you leave. So an example of that executive summary, what I also call discovery agreement at the end of the annual review, might, once you get into it, sound something similar to this. So Bob, when we first started talking today, what we did cover was the change in your job. You got a new job, you got a new promotion, and that also changed your annual compensation and the structure, and you gave me all the details of that. Congratulations, by the way. I just wanted to make note that I've got that all written down. Then we reviewed all the coverages. You didn't have any questions in that whatsoever. We talked about the fact that last year we were going to get some long-term care insurance. You looked at it, but at that time you weren't ready to do it. And in this meeting you said it's definitely something that we need to revisit. So next time I get back together with you, we will be taking a look at that. We took a look at what we're doing for the kids' college and we're good for now. We're not going to make any changes to that. You had a few questions about your life insurance, but for now, we're not going to make any changes to that. And then last but not least, I reviewed the referrals that you had given me. I gave you an update of those, and you just now gave me two additional referrals. I really appreciate that. I'll let you know how that goes as well. That would be an example of a discovery agreement. The next step, and the last step in the sales cycle for the annual review is, you got it, referrals. Now, this is my favorite part of the annual review, simply because, let's face it, by this time, the people that you're seeing are people that you like a lot, they like you a lot, you've got an existing relationship, And the general rule of thumb is people tend to refer you to people that are just like them. So it's not that much different than how I taught you in my prospecting module. The only difference is prior to going into your prospecting language, you're going to give an update of every referral they've given to you in the past. That just might simply say, hey, Bob, I really want to thank you for the referrals that you've given me in the past. If you remember last year in our annual review, you introduced me to two coworkers, Mary Jones and Bill Smith. Mary is a client of another advisor in my firm, in my office, who's a great advisor, by the way. So she's in great hands. And Bill actually became a client of mine. And that would have never happened had you not given that introduction to me. So I really appreciate that. Now, my staff and I have taken the time and liberty to do a little bit more research, and I think we've identified two additional people that you know that I'm really excited about meeting as well. So the two questions I have is A, do you know them? And B, would you be willing to introduce me to them just like you did Mary and Bill? It's as simple as that. So with all the advisors I work with throughout the country, their biggest challenge more often than not is filling their calendar up with the right kind and the right amount of people. Most advisors say to themselves, if I could just see more people, I could be so much more profitable. They really enjoy what they do. They think when they get in front of people, they're effective with their clients. They just don't have enough people to meet with. So if that's your challenge, I wanna show you how this annual review and you embracing the annual review from a numerical standpoint is going to make your practice so much more productive and so much easier. I think you're really gonna enjoy it. So what I'm gonna do now in showing you these numbers is we're gonna make a few assumptions. One is fairly realistic, the other one's completely unrealistic. The fairly realistic one is that the number you came to, the finite number, is 360, just because it allows me to do easy math. So now you have 360 people in your system. And you embrace my system, which means you call them on their birthday just to say hello, and then you call them for the annual review 6 months after that birthday call. And what's totally unrealistic is we're gonna assume that out of the 360 people, you have exactly 30 in every single month that has a birthday. So you have 30 people in January, 30 people in February, 30 people in March. That's not realistic, but if you follow along with me, you'll see where I'm going with this. What you're doing now is you have 360 kept annual reviews in a year, or 30 in one particular month. So you have 30 annual reviews. Conservatively, this numeric example says that 10 of those 30, there'll be enough activity that generates what I like to call a case open, that there's reason to get back together again. 10 out of those 30. And then out of those 10, there's 3 additional follow-up meetings or second closes, if you may, that you need to get back together with those 10. So now you do the math, there's 43 kept appointments just from the annual reviews. And then if you're seeing 12 new people every single month, and out of those 12, there are 8 case opens where you need to get back together with them in that given month, you do the math and you see the numbers, it's 63 kept appointments a month. If you had that, would your practice be growing? It reminds me, remember that concept from Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, flywheel concept, where it takes forever to move that big concrete flywheel like an inch, and then it starts moving more and more and more. That inch is like your first year in the business. But you embrace this concept of annual reviews, you have to get out of your own way. This systematic process of annual reviews is constantly filling your calendar with activity. You're gonna love it.